I would like to today to begin the idea of the Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov. What exactly is the Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Tov, both psychologically and spiritually? When the individual or the neshama is placed in the guf, the neshama is aware, it's a self or a consciousness which is aware of itself. You know, it is a being which is aware of itself as a being. Now, it also is aware that it has a will, that it has wants, desires, or wishes. That's what the will is, the wanting aspect of a human being. And depending on what it wants, it will strive in that direction. And the human, a person can strive in one of three directions: in thinking, in speaking, and doing. Those are the three areas of activity that people strive in or actually manifest being. They strive in those areas. Machshava, dibur, maisa. But the idea is that the person, what does he want to strive in? Well, it all depends on what his desires are, his wants are. Now, if the neshama has no desires whatsoever, so it's obviously not going to do anything. So even if the Ribbono Shel Olam gives a task, you remember what the task was? The task was, the situation was what? The situation was the absence or the concealment of the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the Bria. And the task of the individual is to bring back the Ribbono Shel Olam into the Bria, to Megali Yehudai, to reveal again the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the Bria. That's the task. Now, if the neshama has absolutely no desires whatsoever, so it won't do anything. Why even bother to do a task if there's no desire to do a task? So what the Ribbono Shel Olam does is that it gives the neshama, or the human being, inclinations or drives which force the individual to choose. In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam is not telling the individual what to choose, but the Ribbono Shel Olam wants the individual to be forced to choose, and therefore either earn reward or not earn reward. That's like, if your job is to get into an arena and fight, somebody has to force you into that arena to fight. Because you can easily choose not even to get into the arena, not even to involve yourself in a conflict. So what the Ribbono Shel Olam does is the Ribbono Shel Olam gives the neshama desires or wants, which then force it to go and seek fulfillment of those desires. It now must involve itself, engage itself in the task. That's the beginning of the concepts of what the Yetzer is, or the Yetzer is. The Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, as we call it, and the Yetzer Tov, the good inclination. So, as a result of the fact that the neshama is placed in the guf, as you recall, it severs its relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and now immediately loses or has a sense of loss of self. It loses its sense of self because it was severed from dveikus with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And of course, since one who is connected or dovak to the Ribbono Shel Olam has the greatest sense of self, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is the whole idea of self or being. And the more you're separate from the Ribbono Shel Olam, the greater is the loss of sense of self. And that is the origin of what's called the drive or desire for self-worth, which I had gone through in the Shirin previously. Now, the Neshama now has a desire, or let's look in terms of the Adam, because an Adam is nothing more than the combination of the physical and the spiritual, the Neshama. Now this Adam has a desire for self-worth, to assert or to feel as if it's something or somebody. So the question is, how is it going to fulfill that need, that drive? So what happens is that the Ribbono Shel Olam offers two directions and two opposing forces in either direction which beckon to the individual, come and fulfill it in my direction. And the other force says, come and fulfill it in my direction. And both forces incline the individual constantly between them. So in other words, the desire of the Adam to gain a feeling of worth now has two different directions. And in both directions there is a force which the individual, the Adam, perceives in either way, which is forcing it to go in one direction or to go in another direction. So therefore, the sense of being that an individual is looking for can now be achieved in one of two directions. This is the idea of yitzras, inclinations. And the Rebbe Yishlam assigns a malach, and that's the idea where malach comes in, that the malach has shlita, it has dominion over the physical body. It can create anything it wants in the body. So what the idea is that the individual now, since the neshama is in the guf, it now begins experiencing physical urges or whatever, physical ideas, because the force exists in the body. It's a physical force, physical drive and need. Whether it be physical, psychological, it's still rooted in the body. But the one who's in control of that is a malach. Now the truth is that every event that happens, everything that exists, is controlled by a malach. But malachim are really messengers or agents which are designated to perform certain tasks. That's all they are. And over the body itself, there are malachim that have been given the assignment to control the physical body. It can produce whatever urge, whatever feeling it wants in the body. Of course, it does it via the physical mechanisms, the human brain and so on. It works ayidei teva. In other words, for every urge or every feeling, hunger, hunger has a physical base. When you feel hungry, there's something going on in the body, the stomach is rubbing against each other, whatever, and there's no food. You experience that in the mind as hunger, and that is a drive. So there is you, who is the self, the person, experiencing drives in the body. And you experience drives in terms of the body and in terms of the mind. The mind has its own forces or needs, which I had mentioned. Adequacy, the need for worth, acceptance, and so on. These are drives that the mind gives you. They're not rooted in the body. But the idea is that a malach is behind the force of the body itself. He's the one who originates through teva, through the physical mechanisms. He's able to give you the feeling, the perception of many, many different kinds of feelings and pleasures and so on. It's all based on a malach, which is based on a physical mechanism. He's the one that controls it. But the reason why I mention malach is because of the idea of Yetzer and Yetzer Tov as being malachim. The truth is that Yetzer and Yetzer Tov are physical ideas or psychological ideas, but of course, what gives origin to these physical or psychological ideas or drives is malachim. That's why they can create or they can instill in you different feelings and urges which immediately will force you to do certain things. Now you have the free will not to do what the force is. Many times you have a taiva for something and you don't have to listen to that desire, that urge. You have the free will not to be dominated by the urge. But the feeling or the perception of the urge is a yetzer. It's an inclination, depending on what the inclination is. So therefore, the idea of what a yetzer is, an inclination, is nothing more than an urge, a drive, or a need that is experienced by you, forcing you in one direction, which you do not necessarily have to go after. But you perceive the force, the drive, and that is called the yetzer. Because it's inclining you to go after it, to fulfill the need or drive, whatever that is. So we begin to see that an individual has a need for self-worth, or to assert, or to feel a sense of being, and that there are inclinations which originate from malachim, and they tamper with the body, if you want to look at it that way, and they create physical drives and psychological drives. In other words, bodily drives are created as a result of a spiritual entity called the malach, but we experience them physically. And the drive, which is a koyach, a force, inclines you to go in different directions. That's what the yetzer is physically, the way we feel them physically. And spiritually, they are the malachim controlling those physical urges. For instance, it says by Yehuda and Tamar, that Yehuda, when Tamar met him on the road, and she presented itself as a prostitute, he wanted to go right by her, in the mice of Yehud and Tamar. because she disguised herself, because the whole business, the whole story in the Chumash, she was married to his son and he died and he never fulfilled his promise to give her his youngest son. So therefore she said, okay, then she wanted kids, so she was now going to entice Yehuda. So what happened was, Yehuda, in the Medrash says, he was going to walk right by her. I mean, it was no big deal for him to avoid the temptation that she was offering him. He was that kind of a person. But what the Rabbanu Shalom did is he took away his Bechira. He commanded, the Medrash says, he commanded the Malach that controls the drive of lust, of Zima, the sex drive. And he commanded that Malach, obviously, to increase the drive to such a proportion where Yehuda had no Bechira. There was nothing he could do. I mean, technically, he had the capacity not, but the force is so great that in actuality, in no way can you abstain. So therefore, what Yehuda did was not a chet. His bechira was taken away. This is what the Medrash says. Again, we see the idea. Malach didn't come over and hit him on the head and force him to go. No, the Malach works through the physical body by creating the urge. In this case, he accentuated or made much more severe the drive, the sex drive itself. So Yehuda therefore had no bechira. But in any case, what the Yetzer is. A Yetzer is an inclination, and we experience it as a drive, and if we are inclined in that direction, and it originates from a Malach. Now, as I said, there are two drives, so therefore there are different opposing forces which will incline them in different ways, or us to go in different directions. Both directions will give us a sense of self. The sum total of all the drives is divided into two directions. One is called Tov, and the other is Ra. And these drives or forces which are acting upon the individual in a bodily fashion, okay, has its origin, I should say, in Malachim. That's why Yetzer Tov, Yetzer Hara is referred to Malach, Tov, Malach, Malach, Hamovis, whatever, and the Yetzer Tov also. But the idea is that we experience them as bodily urges which give us directions, and therefore they incline us in certain directions. Now, it's also too important that the Yitzhak give us needs, but they do not give us the fundamental need of self-worth that we have automatically. They give us the directions from which to fulfill our sense of worth. Okay, the alternative directions, which we'll see. Now, it's also important to understand that a man, Adam, is not evil. When the Rebbeinu Shalom says by Noach and so on, Ki yetze lev ha'odom, the inclination of a man's heart, rak rak klayim, is evil all day long. The Rebbeinu is not saying man is evil. Man is not evil per se. Man has an inclination which tends, or which tries to incline him or force him in a direction of evil. But the Rebbeinu Shalom is saying that all he's doing is listening to that force. He's not listening to the other force. It's rak rak klayim. The Rebbeinu doesn't say the ki ha'odom rak ra, man is evil. The inclination of man's heart, which is his will, his desire, is always in the direction of evil. He's always allowing the evil influence, those forces which pull a man toward evil, to win. So the idea again is that man is not evil inherently, as some people think, Christians especially, but man is basically a divine being that has an evil inclination, that has an inclination that pulls him or gives him bodily urges which force him in a direction of evil. But man also has a Yetzer Tov, an actual inclination which we'll talk about, which actually forces you in the direction of good. And again, we have to understand each one, how they manifest themselves in the body, because then they have meaning. To talk about a Malach influencing you does not give you meaning. But to talk about how it manifests itself psychologically, what phenomena, psychological phenomena is based on this, is much more worthwhile. Now, by the way, Rak Ra Kol Hayom is the end letters of Rak Ra Kol Hayom is Amalek. And Amalek, the reason why he's Rak Ra Kol Hayom is because he is evil. He doesn't incline toward evil. Amalek is the human expression of what a Malach HaMavis would look like. What are the directions? What do I mean by urges and drives which give you a direction to fulfill your needs of self-worth? What does this mean? Let's begin understanding or analyzing the idea of Yetzer Tov. Now, many people try to understand what Yetzer Hara is. What the Yetzer Hara is. But it's much more difficult and elusive to define psychologically or physical reality what the Yetzer is, for many reasons. There are several questions which appear. Chazal gives certain statements about the Yetzer Tov, so it makes it difficult. The first statement that Chazal give about the Yetzer Tov is that he appears at 13 years only, 13 years old. That's when he appears. He's not here. A human being, an Odom, does not have a Yetzer Tov until he's 13 years old. He has a Yetzer Hara as soon as he's born, because it says in Bereishis, La Pesach Chatas Roivetz, sin lies, couches right at the door. The Rebbeinu Shem is talking to Cain after he killed Hevel. And he's saying, if you want, you can conquer it. So he says, La Pesach Chatas Roivetz, sin lies right at the door. What door? When you come right out of the womb, sin is right there, which means that right at the time you're born, you already have a Yetzer Hara. But the Yetzer Tov comes at 13, so the question is, what happens at 13 that's so radically different than when you're 9 or 8? What's going on? What does that mean? The second question is certain other very interesting ideas. It says that a katan is potter for mitzvahs. A cheresh shet of a katan is potter for mitzvahs. A cheresh is a person who is born deaf and dumb. He is potter for mitzvahs. A shaita is a person who is psychotic or insane. He's potter for mitzvahs. And the third one is a katan, a minor. A minor is anybody who is 13 and below, in the case of a male, or 12 in the case of a woman, female. In any case, a katan is potter. So the question is, why is a katan potter for mitzvahs? What does that mean? How do we understand that? In addition, there are certain ideas which are, in general, interesting to try to clarify. We notice that adolescence, which approximately begins after 13 and 12, depending on male or female, there are certain interesting kind of phenomena which we see, or behaviors which we see by an adolescent, which is different than a child. Adolescents seem to want to find meaning or identity. The whole business of the 60s, there's a search about something, a search for some kind of identity. Who am I? Meaning, what should I be doing? Which does not occur at all in childhood. It occurs only in adolescence. The question is, why? What does it mean? In addition, do we say that the Yetzer Tov is the Seichel, the intelligence? In other words, maybe at 13 there is a change in intelligence. At 13 there's a fulfillment of the potential of intelligence, but actually it goes on even until about 20. But the idea is that there are many children who are brilliant. What about a child who's, let's say, 9 years old and is a child prodigy? There are many children who are more brilliant than 14-year-olds or 15-year-olds. But yet, according to Chazal, they don't have a Yetzer Tov. So obviously it's not going to be intelligence. The intellect, the power of thinking, is not what the Yetzer Tov is. Or else then it wouldn't be related to a specific age. A person could have a Yetzer Tov even much younger. So therefore, it's not going to be some kind of the idea of intelligence. Also, it's very interesting to know what happens in childhood that's so radically different than what happens in adulthood. What really is the difference between a child and an adult? And a teenage is nothing more than a beginning adult. Teenage is the metamorphosis, time of change. That a child, you go from being a child to an adult, and a teenage is the middle years of change. It's like a moth coming from a caterpillar or whatever. Same idea, going through a cocoon stage. In mankind, it's represented by the teenage stage. But in any case, what exactly is the difference between an adult and a child, besides the obvious physical differences and so on? But what distinguishes them in a certain psychological sense, which has meaning for Hashkofa? Now, these are the questions that have been asked. And so I'm asking not only what the Yetzer Tov is, I'm asking you other phenomena, behavioral phenomena, which we see in children, and we see also in adults. And the question is, what are really the differences? Why is a katan potter for mitzvahs? What the difference between a child and an adult is, certainly from a Hashkofa standpoint? We see that the intellect is not the Yetzer Tov. Why is it that adolescents have this quest for meaning and identity and so on? And also, what does it mean that the Yetzer Tov appears at Yud Gimel Shanim? So we've asked certain questions which are important to answer. In order to understand the Yetzer Tov, there are certain ideas that we'll go into. And the ideas themselves would present itself. And you'll see more or less what the Yetzer Tov seems to be. Now remember, a Yetzer is a drive. That's what it is. It's an inclination. It's something that you experience physically, meaning bodily. It doesn't have to be a physical urge, it can be a psychological urge also. But it's certainly a bodily urge that you experience physically. The key difference between a child and an adult is the fact that a child is not concerned is that if he accommodates or if he lives in accordance with the reality he perceives. It doesn't make a difference to him. An adult does. In other words, at 13 years old, what you see automatically, and we begin to use the word responsibility, but now you see more what it means. A person after 13, or the beginning of adolescence, or whatever, is different because now they want to live in accordance with reality. They have a drive to live with what they understand to be. You don't see that previously. That is what the Yetzer Tov is. The drive to live in accordance with the reality that you perceive, and not to suspend reality, or what's the difference, is the difference between the Yetzer Tov, with a child, with the Yetzer Tov, without. In other words, what you were going to mention, child, why do children play fantasy? They can make believe. Because to them, they don't mind if they suspend reality for a while. It doesn't make a difference. They don't have that drive that their actions or behavior is really in an accordance with what they understand to be true. They lack that drive. They lack the Yetzer Tov. The drive that compels or forces somebody to want to live in accordance with reality. And we'll get into what is reality. But there's the drive to live in accordance with that reality. So therefore, children engage in fantasy and play because it doesn't make a difference. A child is potter from mitzvahs because he has no responsibility. What does responsibility mean? That even though he understands the mitzvah and he understands the significance and so on, but it doesn't mean he will observe the mitzvah because he doesn't necessarily feel that he has to live in accordance with the reality that he's perceiving. If there's a mitzvah, great. But wait a minute, I want to play something now. I want to do something else now. Reality, there's a mitzvah, everybody's running to shul or whatever. So what? I'll go and play my games right now. There's no concern, there's no drive to want to live with the reality. Therefore, there's no responsibility. Responsibility is where a person is concerned to do the task assigned. In the case of a child, the child has no responsibility because it's not concerned necessary to live in accordance with reality. That's why it's part of the mitzvahs. Because it lacks the Yetzer Tov. As long as you don't have that Yetzer Tov, you cannot be chayv mitzvahs. As long as you don't have an inclination which compels you or forces you in a certain way, I shouldn't say compel, I should say certainly forces you, there is a force existing that pushes you in the direction of living in accordance with reality, then you don't. And children don't have that. So what I'm saying is that the Yetzer Tov is basically the drive or the urge that a person feels when he reaches pubescence, which is the adolescence or Yud Gimel Shanim, whatever. It's the drive that a person feels that he wants to assume the responsibility or to live really in accordance with the reality that he understands. Now, part of this drive is also the idea that a person wants to, if he wants to live in accordance with reality, what is reality, number one, and what is the valued reality? What is the reality which I want to live in accordance with? There are many ways of life. So a person begins to seek value or meaning. So in other words, the adolescent's quest is part of the Yetzer Tov. All of a sudden he has this drive or need to live in accordance with reality, and all of a sudden then he must then begin searching reality, his identity, who am I? What is the world? What is the meaning in the world? Because what is the valued reality? What is that reality that I want to live in accordance with? There are many styles of life. That's why an adolescence has those drives. Because that's exactly what Yetzer Tov is all about. The quest for identity or meaning, the quest to become part of life and to live in accordance with life, is the Yetzer Tov. Therefore, we experience those drives in adolescence, because that is the Yetzer Tov. We now understand what it means that the Yetzer Tov appears at Yud Gimel Shanim, and this truly does appear at Yud Gimel Shanim. It doesn't appear before. And we understand that it's not a child's intellect, because a kid can be brilliant, but he's not. There's no urge or force on him to want to live in accordance with that reality, with a meaningful reality. What's the difference if he understands reality very well? A child who's a child prodigy simply means that he understands reality better than you. But that doesn't mean he's interested in living in accordance with reality. Therefore, he's part of mitzvahs. That's what differentiates him between an adult or an adolescent and a child. And that really is an essential difference between a child and an adult. Their attitudes about the way they want to conduct themselves. The child wants to conduct himself not always in conformity to reality. He can play or do whatever, suspend reality. And the adult generally lines up his behavior in conformity to reality. Therefore, he searches. He has a need to know what is the real truth. And not only what is the real truth, but what is the real valued truth. What is the truth that I should adapt myself to? So the search for truth is a Yetzer Tov. So this more is trying to explain what the Yetzer Tov is also. It's a desire to conform to reality, to truth. Therefore, it's a desire as a result of that to know what the truth is and to know what the valued truth is. That truth which presents meaning, or that truth which is something that he wants to really live in accordance with. And that truly comes at Yud Gimel Shanim. Other things come at the... Now the physical urges come obviously when the person is born, but I'll get into that. Now, there is another idea also, another drive which is also part of the Yetzer Tov. And that drive is what's called guilt. Now, all people have what's called, what they call in psychology a superego, but what it really means is a conscience. If you are going to do something wrong, you feel guilty. There's a certain sense of guilt. That's an emotion. It's a very powerful emotion. It's a very devastating one if you experience it all the time. What does guilt do? What's the need for guilt? Well, what the Rebbe Mishnah wants to make sure is he gives you a drive which is going to force you to examine the world, force you to examine truth, force you to look for meaning, okay? And as a result of that, you will find truth. So in other words, merely by having a drive to want to know the truth and what is the meaningful truth, and to want to accommodate myself, live in accordance with that truth, that is a sufficient drive enough to get you to do the avodah. But the Rebbe Shem also wants you to make sure that you won't do against what you value. So therefore you have what's called the emotion of guilt. Now, what is a conscience? A conscience is the values that an individual internalizes as he grows up. How does a person learn values? What is a value? A value is truth which is desirable. There are truths which are not desirable, but then there are truths which are desirable. That's a value. That's a certain standard. Where do we learn our values? We learn our values first from our family, then from the subgroup, whatever subgroup you're on, religions and so on, male, female, and so on. Then you learn your values from the society at large. And after a while, even though the parents are no longer alive, you internalize those values in your own mind, and you live in accordance with those values. And if you deviate from those values, you experience guilt. So what the Rebbe Shalom does is he, not only does he give you a drive to go after valued truth and to live in accordance with it, but if you are going to go into the other direction, the other physical urges, which we'll talk about, you are going to feel guilty. So he's got two ways of stopping you from listening to the Yetzer Hara. If you listen to the Yetzer Hara, you're going to feel guilty because you're going against what you value, assuming. Now the question, of course, is what do you value as a truth, which we'll get into. But if you go in the ideal, the direction of the physical urges, you're going to feel guilty, and that's going to stop you. And in addition to that, he's also got the drive in general to want to search true meaning and live in accordance with that. That's all part of what's called the Yetzer Tov. Because like I say, there are several drives leading in you in the direction of Tov, which means to derive self-worth from the Avodah. Now, let's assume you go in the direction of Tov. What does that mean? You search meaning, you search for truth and so on, and then it becomes apparent to you that there exists a Ribono Shel Olam and so on. So the idea is that you, Taka, the Yetzer Tov is sufficient by itself to get you to find out meaningful truth, value truth, and you have anyway a drive to do in accordance with that. And what you do is you find out what's meaningful truth is the declaration of Einei Milvadoiv, the Avodah, the mitzvahs. And you recall that there are two ways of relating to a mitzvah. Every mitzvah, there are two ways. Either you're against the mitzvah, and you've got to fight yourself, or you're for the mitzvah, you would have done the mitzvah in the first place, but the Avodah here is to negate your self-interest and do it only for the interest of the Ribono Shel Olam. So in those mitzvahs which you don't want to do, then you do it because God wants you to do it. So obviously you're negating your interests, because to do the mitzvah self is against self-interest. In those mitzvahs which you would do anyway, even without Ribono Shel Olam, the Avodah is to negate yourself and to do only for the Ribono Shel Olam's interests, which I had discussed previously many times. So therefore, by doing that, and therefore a person is made or testifies Einei Milvadoiv by doing the Avodah, which I had gone to many times, then the person automatically becomes mizdabik on a ruchnistic plane with the Ribono Shel Olam, and he actually gains a sense of self. And if you recall last week, I talked about why is it you find tzaddikim do not feel inferior, even though all they're doing is the will of God. A person gains a sense of self by doing his own will, not by doing another will. If you look at a slave, many slaves tend to have inferiority complexes, because they never do what they want. They're always doing what somebody else, their master, wants. But you don't find this to be true by tzaddikim. When we call them Eved Hashem, a servant of God, you don't find a tzaddik to be. They have tremendous sense of selves. They're very strong individuals. And the answer to that is that doing the will of the Ribono Shel Olam, negating self, actually gives one a sense of being, because you become spiritually closer. The neshama is margish, the closeness that the Ribono Shel Olam gets, and it automatically feels it. Many times you feel something that you yourself do not know why you feel it, but it's the neshama that feels, and you immediately perceive the feeling that the neshama is feeling from elsewhere. So therefore, as a result of the fact that you are doing the Avodah, you're negating self, you're testifying Einei Milvadoiv, you are getting closer to the Ribono Shel Olam, and the neshama is feeling that closeness. And that closeness, of course, gives you a tremendous sense of self. So therefore, we see that you've got a Yetzer Tov, which is the drive, ultimately, to search for meaningful reality or truth, and to live in accordance with that. You've got the guilt pushing away the other urges and so on, because they are not value truths. And if you go in that direction, eventually you wind up in doing mitzvahs. And doing the mitzvahs, you get this tremendous sense of self. So the Yetzer Tov is an inclination. It's the path that will lead you to a sense of self by eventually doing the Avodah. This is what the Yetzer Tov is. And we understand that the Yetzer Tov has several drives, all pushing in that direction. The drive to live in accordance with truth, which is the difference between a child and an adult, and it comes only at 13 years old. The drive to, therefore, to seek knowledge, truth, and meaningful truth, and the ideas of the feeling called guilt. Now, there's something I wanted to also mention, and the ideas of guilt. What is guilt? We see that the idea, the emotion of guilt, is when you go against your conscience, right? But what is your conscience? It's nothing more than the ideas that you have, the value truths that you have, that you know you should live in conformity with. But the idea is a child cannot search for truth while he's a child. So then what's going to give him the value truths which was going to oppose the Yetzer Hara. Right? All he's got is the Yetzer Hara, which we'll talk about. He has the Yetzer Tov, so when who's going to replace the Yetzer Tov? Even if he has guilt, but that's not going to help him, because who's going to give him the values? He's not searching for himself. What gives him the values, the true values, that he's going to have in order to fight the Yetzer Hara? And the answer to that is you, as parents. That's the idea of chinuch. There's a mitzvah saseh to mechanech your child, because you must give him the values, the true values, the value truths, which he now can have and therefore feel guilty. So in other words, the only thing he has to keep himself away from the Yetzer Hara is guilt. He doesn't have the drive to live in accordance with reality. That's the Yetzer Tov. A child doesn't have the Yetzer Tov. So then what has he got? Then the question is, what's going to keep him from falling into the trap of the Yetzer Hara, which is the urges which we'll speak about? And the answer to that is, your chinuch, you give him the values, the truths, the values, and he internalizes that, and his guilt will stop him. So he's got guilt that stops him from going in the direction of the Yetzer Hara. Assuming you've done your jobs of being mechanech a child. Because then he's got the values, the true values, or rather the value truths, those truths that have meaning. If you don't mechanech him, then in no way will he be able to fight a tendency to go in the opposite direction. Because even if he has the emotional capacity to feel guilt, he's not going to feel guilty if he doesn't feel it's a value. If he feels it's okay to steal, he's obviously not going to feel bad if he all of a sudden experiences an urge to steal. So the idea of chinuch is to replace his searching, to give him that conscience, and therefore guilt is the mechanism in his case which will help not to go after the Yetzer Hara. However, adults, of course, have both. But what we understand is that the guilt itself is a mechanism which is in the service of the Yetzer Tov. Make sure that you stick to your values. Make sure you stick to the truths that you perceive as meaningful and valuable. And the guilt, make sure you stick to that. And that helps you not to go against the other inclination, which tells you to go against the truths or values that you have. So guilt is a very important emotion. We begin to understand the reason, the origin and the reasons for guilt, that it fits in with the Yetzer Tov, as well as the drive for the need to conform to reality. Now, even though, interestingly enough, that guilt starts off immediately in childhood, but it's not the essential Yetzer Tov. The essential Yetzer Tov, of course, is the desire to live in accordance with reality, and therefore to search that reality, and to find out what is the meaningful aspect of reality. That is really the Yetzer Tov. But what's important to understand is that the idea of what is right and wrong is perceived by a child. That's an intellectual endeavor. A person can know what is right and wrong. A person has a sense of justice. These things are automatically there. A person through a seichel can realize that. But even if you know what's right and wrong, that doesn't mean you're going to do what's right and wrong, because you lack the Yetzer Tov. There's no reason necessarily why you want to live in conformity. There's no drive that which motivates you to live in accordance with that right as something that you really want to do. I'm not talking about the guilt end of it. You want to live because you're going to feel guilty. No, I'm not talking about a negative drive. I'm talking about a positive drive. There's no real positive drive that you want to live in accordance with what's right, even if you perceive right as a child. What I mean, the Yetzer Tov, doesn't mean that child doesn't know what's right and wrong. A child does know what's right and wrong, and has a sense of right and wrong, sense of justice and so on, a sense of fair play. Kids have that. The idea is that, so what? There's no drive that will motivate a kid to live in accordance with that sense of fair play, that sense of right and wrong, of good and bad. This is the idea of Yetzer Tov. So Yetzer Tov is a drive that motivates or forces. It's a force where a person wants to live automatically. It's just a drive. You feel that I want to do what's right. You didn't necessarily always feel that as a child. And if you did, you want to do what's right because it'll please your parents. It's not something that's inherently in you as a drive. Okay? You may want to do what's right to please your parents. Okay? But If your parents didn't care, would you do that also? No, you probably wouldn't. An adult does things which are right and wrong because it inherently wants to do that. It has a drive to want to live in accordance with right and wrong, good and bad, which is really truth, which is valued. That's the difference. It's not reacting to an external motivation. It's now, of course, that's the Yetzer Tov. Now, of course, an adult can do evil things also, but that's in the idea of Yetzer Hara, which we'll get into. But the Yetzer Tov, the unadulterated, pure Yetzer Tov, is that idea. The tendency or the urge in a human being at the time of pubescence that it wants to live in accordance with what it feels to be right, good, desirable, whatever. And therefore it searches reality for the truth and for the meaningful reality, because it knows that that is what is good. The meaningful truth is what is good. That is the Yetzer Tov. And a person can obviously understand what is good or bad as a child, but that doesn't mean it wants to live in accordance with that good or bad. If it does, it's many times motivated by parents because it wants to get things or whatever. And the idea is that a child can learn to live also in accordance with good, but it has to be taught that. It's not, you're not taught to feel a physical urge, you're inborn. The Yetzer Tov pops up, it's not a learned idea. If a child learns to be good and it has a real desire to be good, I'm not saying children have no desire to be good, they do have a desire to be good. It's a learned idea, and it originates from the fact that it wants to listen or accommodate itself to its parents. After a while, the desire to be good becomes internalized, and it really wants to be good, as a certain ideal that it wants to do. But it's not something which is a drive which is internal. It's a learned drive. It's not an innate psychological drive, and therefore can be unlearned. Anything which is learned can be unlearned, given the right circumstances. But something which is innate can be shaped by learning, but the essential drive is always there. That's the differences. So this is a discussion really about what do we mean by Yetzer Tov. So again, to summarize, the idea that the Rebbe Shlomo gave Yitzris inclinations, which are drives, forces which tend to pull a person in two directions, one toward the good, one toward the bad. And the directions mean that you get pulled in two directions to get this feeling of self. That if you go in the direction of Yetzer Tov, you get a sense of self. If you go in the direction of Yetzer Hara, you get a sense of self. But there are two forces acting upon you that pulls you in two different directions, that gives you this sense of self. And that the origin of these forces, of course, is a malach. Also what was discussed is the idea of what the Yetzer Tov is. That basically it's an innate drive that comes at 13 that forces you, or you perceive a force, an urge, to want to live in accordance with what reality is, what the true reality, what truth is in other words, and what valued reality is, what you perceive as desirable reality. And you have the urge to live in accordance with that. That alone ensures that you will eventually be over the Rebbe Shlomo, even without just that drive alone. And then the ideas of guilt as a drive which stops you from going against what you value, and the idea that you have to machanach your child and give him the value truth before he gets the Yetzer Tov, and that'll help him. And even if he develops a desire, it originates from outside. The Yetzer Tov, however, originates from inside. Next week I'll be going into what the Yetzer Hara is, and then what happens as a result, the Yetzer Hara, and why is it that the Yetzer Tov seems to be losing constantly, as the Rebbe Shlomo himself said, Ki Yetzer Lev Odom Rak Rak Kol Hayom. What's really going on? But at least we understand the idea or the rationale for Yitzras, and what the Yetzer Tov seems to be psychologically. That's it. Now today what I would like to talk about is to go into the idea of Yetzer Hara and how he manifests itself, how it manifests itself in a human being. We talked about the concept called the Yetzer, Yitzris, and we mentioned the fact last time that what a Yetzer is nothing more than an urge. It's a force of some kind which the person experiences, acting upon him or herself. And the Yetzer, there are two of them. There are two forces, two urges, both being felt and both exercising itself on the person and pulling in two different directions. And representing a force or giving rise to the force in the human being is a malach behind each one. But the essential idea is that we're dealing with two urges or two forces which incline the individual toward one of two directions. Not that he must go either way, because he is in the middle, but he experiences an urge or a force or a drive, and therefore he can go either in one direction, one drive, or in the direction of the other drive. But he is placed in the center of the drives. And I had mentioned last time that the essential idea of the drives is that in both directions a person achieves some kind of self-worth in either way. And if you recall last week, I had mentioned the Yetzer Tov, that the Yetzer Tov is that urge in a person which he experiences at the beginning of pubescence or puberty, Yud Gimel Shanim. And what that urge is, a desire, an urge to live in accord with that which he understands to be truth. And in, automatically with this drive or urge is also a desire to know truth, which is reality, and more important, to know valued truth, which is meaning. A person strives to know truth, that which is meaningful truth, you know, is that truth which you should want to live in accordance with. And he has this urge to live in accordance with that valued truth that he understands. This is the Yetzer Tov. And if you recall, I said that if a person does go in that direction, he eventually reaches the idea of Torah and mitzvahs, and living in accordance with Torah and mitzvahs gives a person a sense of worth because of his dveikus or his attachment to the Rebbeinu Shlom, which results as because of this, which I'll explain this a little bit more in detail once we've analyzed the Yetzer Hara. Now the question, of course, is what is the Yetzer Hara? Now the Yetzer Hara again is a malach, but this malach has control over the human body. It means it can get you to experience things because it has control over the guf, not over the neshama. Now this malach is called one of three terms. He's either called the Yetzer Hara, he's called the Satan, or he's called the Malach HaMavis. Yetzer Hara, of course, means the evil inclination. The Satan means the adversary. Or Malach HaMavis means the angel of death. Now, in terms of the Malach himself, why is he called all three things? And the answer is it depends what role he does. The Malach, or rather the Satan, or rather the Sitra Achra, that's a general term. Sitra Achra means the other side of Kedusha or holiness. When the Sitra Achra, which is that Malach, is trying to tempt you to do evil, he's called the Yetzer Hara, because that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to incline you to evil. After you've gone to evil, he now arises and serves as a prosecutor, an adversary, and he's Tover you Ledin. He prosecutes you before the heavenly tribunal, before the Rebbeinu Shlom, and tries to get you chayev, that you should get some kind of einish. When he does that, he's called the Satan, the adversary. We find by Eiv, he's called the Satan. The Satan appeared before the Rebbeinu Shlom by Eiv, there because again, he's the adversary, he's trying to prosecute you, or whatever. Now the other idea, when after the Sitra Achra has gotten you to do a chet, a sin, he's provided the inclination, the evil urge, right? And he's prosecuted you, means you are now guilty. The Rebbeinu Shlom assigns him to execute the punishment. So he's the executor. He is therefore the Malach HaMavis. He is the one who does or inflicts the damage or the pain. Now, you'll ask, how can one Malach do three things? Because we know that a Malach only does one job, not three jobs. How can one Malach do will be responsible for tempting you, prosecuting you, and executing you at this, you know, it's one job, or rather it's three jobs. And the answer to that is really one job, Because all of it is to fulfill the concept called din, or justice. And if you recall, justice demands that if you want to receive reward, you've got to work for it. So there has to be an exact accountability. So first, what the Malach tries to do is to tempt you. He sets up the nisoyan, the test situation. And the reason why you must be tempted, and you must resist that temptation, is to earn reward, because that's your earn. That's why you earn it, by resisting temptation. So he makes it possible for you to earn reward, because what you do is you reject the Yetzer Hara. If there was no Yetzer Hara, there would be nothing to reject. Therefore, there's no work that you would do to earn reward. So the Yetzer Hara presents himself to tempt you, and therefore you reject that temptation, and that rejection of temptation is the schar that you earn. So that's, but again, that's all in accordance with din. If you fall into those clutches and you do the chet, then of course he is responsible for the maintenance or actualization of din. He then is the adversary. He brings you to din. What do you deserve? And of course, if you do deserve, then he becomes the executor of din. He fulfills justice. So therefore he is a Malach HaMoves. But it's the same Malach in charge of three different functions, which is really only one idea. So, Yetzer again is Satan, Malach HaMoves, it's all the same thing. And, of course, the Yetzer Hara has many malachim in charge, or rather sub-malachim in charge of many different areas. But he has an entire hierarchy, or entourage, that do his bidding. And the Rebbe Hashem created him for that specific purpose, to try to tempt you away from doing what the Rebbe Hashem wants. So this is the general idea of who we're talking about when we mean the Yetzer Hara. So the next question is, of course, what is the Yetzer Hara? So that's what the Yetzer Hara is. The Malach who's responsible for the maintenance of din, justice. And as such, he has these three different roles. Now, in his role as tempter, or Yetzer Hara, what does that mean? How does the Yetzer Hara tempt? What does that really mean in terms of an Adam? We recall that an Adam anyway has a drive for self-worth. What the Yetzer Hara does is he presents him with an urge, which gives him a direction of fulfilling or getting a sense of worth, a sense of being, but in a different direction than the Yetzer Tov. And we'll see that. Now, what are the urges that the Yetzer Hara can produce in an individual that gets him to follow that direction? There are basically four. The first thing is that the Yetzer Hara creates the urges for physical pleasures. He is that entity which actually gives rise to the urges in the physical body. So the urge of pleasure then leads, of course, an individual to fulfilling or satisfying those drives, those urges, needs, which is pleasure. When a person has satisfied his drive of pleasure, he experiences a pleasurable sensation. That's all part of the Yetzer Hara. Okay? As a result of that, when a person experiences pleasure, as a result of the fact that he instituted the actions which bring him pleasure, what does he also experience? He experiences something more than just pleasure. He experiences a certain feeling of well or worth, a sense of self. One of the ways an individual experiences a sense of worth is by exercising being, by fulfilling his will. When you do what you want to do, when you exercise being, or exercise will, what you also experience is a sense of self, a sense of being. So therefore, the Yetzer Hara also gives him that sense of worth that he experiences by deriving pleasure, by fulfilling pleasures. The second kind of urge that a person has is an urge for productivity, an urge to do, to accomplish, a drive in that direction. And if a person does go in that direction, what he then experiences is a sense of accomplishment or achievement. It's a certain feeling you get. But when you also experience a sense of accomplishment or achievement, what do you also experience? A sense of worth also. Because one of the things that gives a person a sense of worth is his sense of achievement, his ability to do, which is proven by the fact that things are done. When a person achieves something, he feels like he's somebody. He has a sense of worth, a sense of respect, a sense of esteem. See, I can do things. And that's a proof of being also, because only true being can do things, can actually have things done. So the second urge that a person experiences from the Sitra Achra, the Yetzirah, is the sense of productivity, which, if he does fulfill, gives a person the sense of achievement. And when a person gets the sense of achievement, he also experiences a sense of self. In addition to that, the third sense or urge that the Sitra Achra, or rather the Yetzirah, gives an individual is a sense of power, or rather an urge of power, that an individual wants to achieve power over others. And that basically manifests itself in acquiring possessions. Because when a person acquires many possessions, what he begins experiencing is the fulfillment of the urge of power, and the feeling that he gets, the satisfaction that he gets, is called a sense of control or mastery. And possessions are that feelings, or rather those things which give one a sense of control or mastery. So the third urge which a person experiences is the urge of power, which gives a person the fulfillment or a sense of achievement, or rather, excuse me, a sense of control or mastery. Again, this feeling of mastery and control, again, is the feeling given by the Sitra Achra to the individual. The fourth direction, or the fourth urge which is Sitra Achra, the Yetzirah, gives the individual, is the urge for potency, the feeling or the urge to be able to feel as if you can do things, not only the sense of achievement, the productivity, but just the idea that you have the ability, the capacity, the potency to do things. So therefore, a person has a drive or urge for potency, and when he achieves that through money, by having money, he then achieves a certain sense of potency. Even if you do nothing, even if you don't spend money, you get what's called a certain sense of ability. I can do, because I have a lot of money in the bank, like somebody has $1 million. He has an incredible sense of his ability to do things. His sense of potency, or the ability to do, is very strong, because he has a tremendous amount of money in the bank. And money, of course, gives an individual the wherewithal to do things. So therefore, the urge for this feeling of potency, and when you achieve it by acquiring money, you achieve a sense of ability, a sense of competency or potency. That also is by the Sitra Achra. And of course, when you achieve the ability or the feelings of potency, which really becomes omnipotency, what do you really feel like? A tremendous sense of worth and being. So we see that the Yetzirah presents itself in the Adam in four different directions. He gives an individual the urge for pleasure. He gives an individual the urge for productivity. He gives him the urge for power. And he gives him the urge for potency. And in addition, therefore, a person is led in the direction of those urges, because there are forces acting upon him. He experiences those drives or urges, and he goes and tries to accomplish it. He accomplishes the urge for pleasure by engaging in taivas, materialism, and all kinds of pleasures. So the Sitra, the Yetzirah, then gives him the feeling of pleasure. He accomplishes the urge of productivity by striving in many directions to achieve many things. So he gets a certain sense of achievement, which the Yetzirah gives him. He gets a certain sense of power, or rather mastery and control, when he goes in direction, or follows the response to power, and he does that by acquiring vast amounts of possessions and also taking control of others by going war to others, physically abusing others, and so on. He accomplishes a sense of mastery, and he accomplishes a sense of potency by acquiring wealth, which gives him a tremendous feeling of potency. So therefore, the Yetzirah, we see, gives you the urge and the fulfillment, the feelings that you get from the fulfillment. And in addition to that, what he gives you really, and that's the whole end all of this all, the objective, is to give you that sense of worth, that sense of being that you accomplish from all these ideas. He gives you that too. As a result of that, you come to a certain belief about yourself. That belief is that you think you are somebody. As a result of the urges, which force you to strive for those urges, and you get certain feelings as a result of the fulfillment of those urges, you also get the bottom rung of these things, or the basic vehicle of these things, is a sense of self. That feeling that you get a sense of self. As a result of this tremendous sense of self, self-worth or whatever, or feelings of omnipotence, what you then achieve, or what you then get, is a sense or a belief of yesh, that you are something, you are somebody. And therefore you have achieved a sense of self-worth. You believe to be somebody. In other words, your belief now is yeshay mevadai. That's the way the Yetzirah addresses itself. So what he does, he gives you these urges, so in the end he can give you this sense of being, so that you can come to the false belief that you are somebody. That's what the Yetzirah does. Now, if we look at the reverse, what does the Yetzirah Tov do? Because what he will do will be the same as the Yetzirah, but in the opposite direction. The Yetzirah does what? He is the one who gets or gives you the urge, a true urge, not guilt, which means you listen to what's a value truth because you don't want to experience emotion called guilt. The Yetzirah Tov is an urge to live in accordance with value truth. It's an inner urge. It's not something which you do as a result of guilt. And that explains the drives of adolescence and so on, for meaning and truth. But it's a real inner urge where a person wants to understand valued truth, meaning in life, and he wants to live in accordance with that. As a result of that urge, what do? You as an individual are then Isik, or you find the truth by going and searching through the different chokhmas, wisdoms, knowledges. Eventually you find what the truth is, which we'll speak about more later. What you do is you achieve the understanding of truth, and you become aware of the idea of Torah. You learn Torah, you begin to understand the ideas of Torah, and Torah, the hasaga of Torah, ultimately leads to one idea. You begin to perceive the central idea called Einad Mavadai, that in the entire universe, the only being that has any real meaning or truth or value, and the only being that has real existence, is the Rebbeinu Shlalom. So what Torah does, it gives you the hasaga of Einad Mavadai. But Torah is more than just a hasog of Einay Mavadai. Torah also gives you the Aveda. It gives you mitzvahs. And if you recall, all mitzvahs address themselves to you in terms of its choymer, its content, and its tzura, its form. In other words, you will relate to every mitzvah in one of two ways. Either the mitzvah is in accordance with your will, so then the Aveda is to negate your interest and do the thing only for the Rebbeinu Shlom's will, if you recall. In other words, even if you want to do something, even if the Rebbeinu Shlom had not commanded you, the whole Aveda is to negate your self-interest and do it only for the Rebbeinu Shlom's will. And I gave an example, somebody loves to eat matzahs. That you eat matzahs not because you like matzahs, because the Rebbeinu Shlom commanded you to eat matzah, so therefore you negate your interest and do it only for the interest or the idea of the Rebbeinu Shlom, to give him a nachas ruach, to give the Rebbeinu Shlom pleasure, so to speak. And the second kind of mitzvah is where you are against the mitzvah. And the reason why you do the mitzvah, of course, is because, again, you do it to declare Einad Mavadai, therefore you are mevatel your ratzon. You suspend your will and do his will, because only the Rebbeinu Shlom has true existence. So therefore, what the Avoda is nothing more than the belief of Einad Mavadai translated into human behavior, into acts. And that's the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs, which is what the Avodah is the translation of the idea of Einad Mavadai into behavior. It's an actualization of the hasaga, the comprehension of the concept of Einad Mavadai into behavior or action. That's what the Avodah is. And every mitzvah addresses itself to you in one of two ways, and you go in accordance with that. Now, as a result of the fact that you now feel, or rather you are masik, Einad Mavadai, because your search for truth has led you in that direction, So therefore you are masik Einay Mevadeh because of the Torah, and you feel Einay Mevadeh because of the Avodah, the mitzvahs. You get this feeling after doing the mitzvahs constantly that the Rebbeinu Shlomo is the only thing that really is. And that's the feeling of Einay Mevadeh, which means you begin to feel the negation of your own self in terms of what Moshe Rabbeinu said, Vanachnu Mo, what are we? Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't saying a hasoga, he was saying a feeling that Moshe Rabbeinu felt as if he was really nothing, that the Rebbeinu Shlomo is really everything. So as a result of the feeling of Einay Mevadeh, you then come to the belief of hasoga of Einay Mevadeh. This is what you believe. In other words, the learning of Torah and the doing of mitzvahs gives you the feeling of Einay Mevadeh, which gives you the feeling of a negation of self. As a result of that, the fact, your idea or your understanding is that there is only Einay Mevadeh. But as soon as you're masik, or you really feel Einay Mevadeh, and you believe Einay Mevadeh, there are two emotions that immediately arise. The first emotion is called Yira. You stand in awe of the presence of the Rebbeinu Shlomo. That's when you have awe. When you, in other words, when you're masik the Rebbeinu Shlomo's Einay Mevadeh in all its many different ways, you stand in awe of that being. And the second emotion that you get is Ahava, love. You then begin, you yearn to be with that being. You yearn to be dovak or cling to that being as a result of your hasaga and your feeling of Einay Mevadeh, which came from your learning of the mitzvahs and doing and learning, doing the mitzvahs and learning Torah, which came from the drive of the Eitzer Tov in the first place to push you in that direction. You now have achieved Yiran Ahava. In other words, you desire to be with the Rebbeinu Shlomo, to unite with the Rebbeinu Shlomo. And that desire is dvekus. And that dvekus gives you a tremendous sense of self-worth, because you're deriving your sense of being by your yearning to be with Him. So in the end, the Yetzer Tov also pushes you in the direction of worth. But it does it by getting you to feel Einay Mevadeh and to believe Einay Mevadeh. And this creates the emotions of Yir and Ava, which then give you a tremendous sense of worth and being. So we see, therefore, that we have two opposing forces. One is the Yetzer Hara, which gives you urges and gives you feelings if you do those urges. And it gives you also the feeling of self-worth, and therefore you come to believe in your sense of self. But that sense of self is an illusion, because what you believe is Yeshid Mevadeh, but that's really an illusion. Why? Because you have, if you think about it, the pleasures that you've experienced, okay, are really the pleasures which the Yetzer itself has given you to experience. There's nothing in your being that would really, you don't have a being to such an extent where you yourself would have the capacity to experience pleasure or whatever. The idea is that the urge itself is a creation of the Yetzer Hara and the fulfillment of that pleasure. It's all an illusion. Not because you are really something there that gives rise to these urges or whatever, but he can manipulate the goof. The idea of productivity is also an illusion, because what do you really do when you're productive? Why do you have a sense of achievement? You are not the cause of anything. The Rebbeinu Shlomo says that only he is the cause of everything. So therefore, your sense of achievement itself is an illusion. You have done nothing. Only the Rebbeinu Shlomo has shlita on the Bria, or has the ability to achieve. What can you achieve? So therefore, your sense of achievement itself is an illusion. Your sense of power, of course, is also an illusion. Your sense of power, your mastery and control, is an illusion. Again, you have control and mastery over nothing. Alavai, you should have it over yourself. But the truth is, you have it over nothing. It's only that you feel you have this sense of mastery, but that's an illusion that the Yetzer is able to give you. So you should come to the belief that you're something. And of course, the last thing, or your feelings of potency or ability, is itself an illusion. You can do nothing. You have absolutely no potency whatsoever. So the entire idea of the Yetzer Hara is to give you different kinds of urges and feelings so that ultimately you can feel a sense of self and you can believe in your sense of self, that you are yesh oid mevadar. But the whole thing is an illusion, because according to the reality of it, you're really nothing and you possess none of these things. The Yetzer Tov is the urge in the reverse direction. He also wants to give you a sense of self. But the only way you can truly get your sense of self is by realizing the true reality of Ein Mevadar. Because by forcing you in the direction to search for truth and meaning, and to try to live in accordance with that meaning, you come to the conclusion of Ein Mevadar because you learn Torah, and you come to the feeling of Ein Mevadar because you do the mitzvahs. As a result of that, you truly believe Ein Mevadar. And as a result of your belief of Ein Mevadar and your sense of existential inferiority, what you then come is the year and Av of the Rebbeinu Shlom. And it is that Av, or that longing for the Rebbeinu Shlom, that gives you the sense of intimacy, of closeness with the Rebbeinu Shlom. So you then experience a sense of self because you are intimate, you are dovek in the Rebbeinu Shlom. So it is from him that you are experiencing the sense of self. By being dovek, it's like the same idea. People, for instance, it's what's called identification. People identify with certain ideas and so on, and then they get a sense of security. For instance, a person will identify with the winning ball team. Give an example. Why? Because by saying I identify with this team, that I'm part of this team, I therefore have the same sense of strength that this team had. Or when people identify with causes, they identify with countries. People say, I'm an American. Why are they proud to be an American? Because America is a very powerful country. So they, by identifying or by having a sense of closeness or intimacy with America, achieve the same feelings of strength. It's the same process. By identifying or by wanting to be intimate with the Rebbeinu Shlom, you achieve the same sense of strength or being that the Rebbeinu Shlom has. This is a sense of dvekus that a person achieves. And therefore, by feeling the sense of being, you taka come to the real sense or feeling of being that you started out with in the first place. So it comes out, very interestingly enough, that we look at the Yetzer and Yetzer Tov as two opposing forces or urges. Both of them do for you certain things. They both give you urges, and they both give you fulfillment of that urges, but each in the opposite direction. The Yetzer Hara gives you the different urges, the four kind of urges. The Yetzer Tov gives you the urge to seek value, truth, and to live in accordance. Both of them give you a sense of fulfillment that you receive. The Yetzer Hara gives you the sense of fulfillment in terms of pleasure and power and mastery and potency and so on. And the Yetzer Tov gives you the sense of well-being that you feel when you live in accordance with value, truth. Both give you a sense of being or feelings of being when you go in different directions. And both give you a belief. But the Yetzer Hara gives you a belief in your sense of self, in your yeshus. The Yetzer Tov gives you a sense of belief as Ein Mevadar. But that Ein Mevadar is what exactly gives you the true sense of self by being mizdabik in the Rebbeinu Shlom. So we now see how they truly are both yitzris, urges or forces, created by different malachim in order to drive you in different directions, where you achieve sense of self either way. But one, paradoxically, you achieve a sense of self by understanding that you are nothing, and the other is a sense of self you achieve by thinking you are something. But that itself is an illusion. Now, where do we see this in the Torah? We see this in the Torah. How do we know that this is the Yetzer Hara? Because the Rebbeinu Shlom says it. It says in the Chumash, in Parshas Ekev, by Sheni, that the Rebbeinu Shlom says, watch yourself, lest you forget the Rebbeinu Shlom and not do his mitzvahs. What will cause you to forget the Rebbeinu Shlom and not do his mitzvahs? What's going to cause you? Four things. But the question is, who's giving you these four things? Why are you going in the direction of those four things? So the answer, of course, is because this is what the Yetzer Hara does. What are the four things? I had mentioned it previously. Pentuchal v'savoto, lest you eat and be satisfied. Well, that was the urge for pleasure. Uvotim tevim tivne v'yoshofto, and you will build beautiful houses and you'll dwell in that. What's that? building houses, the sense of achievement. Again, Yetzirah. And you will multiply a lot of bok and tsoin, a lot of sheep and cattle. What is that? Possessions, the sense of control and mastery. And then and you will multiply money, silver and gold. Well, that's potency, that's money. There it is. The Rebbe Shlomo says that you will go in these four directions. Either the urge or the direction of pleasure, the direction of productivity, the direction of power, or the direction of potency. Four P's. You'll go in those directions, and as a result of that, what will happen? You will forget the Ribbono Shel'olam, and you will not do his mitzvahs. But wait a minute, I'm saying that when you do these four things, you also achieve a sense of being, not only the different feelings that you get. And that's exactly what the Ribbono Shel'olam says. What will happen? V'rom levavecho, your heart will grow mighty. V'shochachtos Hashem, and you'll forget him, the Ribbono Shel'olam. And what will you say? V'yomarta, and you will say, v'vavecho, in your heart. It is the strength of my hands, my strength, my sense of being that has acquired this. So Rebbe Hashem says, what will drive you away, or what the ultimate sense that will drive you away, is not because you feel pleasure, you have a sense of achievement, you have a sense of mastery or control, or you have a sense of potency. No, it is the last conclusion, which is the idea of self-worth, that you will say in your heart, that is what's going to drive you away from the Rebbe Hashem, and not do his mitzvahs. Therefore, you should remember, you should remember the Rebbeinu Shlom. He is the one who gives you strength. He is the only true being. Last is Choyel. He is the only one that gives you the strength. So the Rebbeinu Shlom is telling you what the Yetzirah is. Because that's exactly what's going to make you forget the Rebbeinu Shlom and not do his mitzvahs. Those four directions. But it's not the feelings that you get from those four directions. It's the underlying feeling of worth and the illusion of being that you have. That's what you're going to achieve. That sense of grandiosity and omnipotency. And therefore you will forget the Rebbeinu Shlom. That we see it often in the Chumash. Now, in addition to that, it says in Bereishis Rabbah, it says there, when the Rebbeinu Shlom created the Yetzirah, it says there, what's the Yetzirah? So it says, if it was not for the Yetzirah, you would not do four things. You would not, it says there, you would have no houses. You wouldn't have any bottom houses. You would not marry. You would not have any kids. And you wouldn't engage in business. That's what it says often in the Medrash. If it wasn't for the Yetzirah. But wait a minute, what is this? Well, you wouldn't have houses, meaning that you wouldn't do what? You wouldn't have sense of achievement in terms of houses. You wouldn't have a wife because there would be no taiva, there would be no sexual desire, there would be no pleasure whatsoever for marriage, so there's no wife, so that represents the entire idea of pleasures. You wouldn't have any kids because children are the closest things in terms of possessions that give a person a certain sense of control or mastery. And you wouldn't engage in business. You wouldn't make money. So the Medrash itself says, if it wasn't for the Yetzirah, these things would cease to be. And of course you need these things, even for the world to continue. So that's what we see what the Sitra Achra is. The ability or the urges in these four directions, the feelings you get from these four directions, the ultimate feeling of the sense of self, Kirch V'Yetzim Yadi, and the illusion that you are somebody, and therefore you'll forget the Rebbeinu Shlom. We now see what the Yetzirah and Yetzer Tov is. This exact equality, both schlepping you in two different directions, where you should achieve some sense of worth. But one giving you the sense of worth and a belief which is an illusion, because you have nothing in that direction, really. And the other one giving you the sense of worth by negating self. You achieve a true sense of worth by being mezdapik in the Rebbeinu Shlom, as a result of Yira and Ahava. Now, we see this also interestingly in Pesach. Now you ask, what does all this have to do with Pesach? Everything is the answer. Now, where do we see this all? Is it just convenient that we happen to be a week and a half away from Pesach? Or there's mamish who fits right into the entire shiur? Well, the truth is it fits into the entire shiur. How? Let me ask different questions on Pesach. We know that Pesach, what the story is, the Yitzis Mitzrayim and so on. And the Rebbe commanded a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah commanded? Chometz. Do not eat chometz. And also eat matzah. So my first question to you then is, what is the significance of chometz and matzah? To eat something flour and water and to stay away from chometz. That's the first question that I would like to ask. Second question, that there's very funny halachas, very modern, strange halachas when it comes to chometz. You don't find by any other isa that which is prohibited to eat. The Torah says do not eat it. Okay. But then the Torah says tashbisu, you have to destroy chometz from your house. Which we do, we have bir chometz. You don't have that by other mitzvahs, really. The third halacha is the Torah says lo yiro elchov lo yimotze, that chometz cannot be seen in your house and it cannot be found in your house. You don't have that by any other thing which is forbidden to eat. It's isa re'iyo and isa mitziyo. And the fourth idea is that chometz is osu b'mashehu, that you're not allowed to have a mashehu afilo, even anything, not just a kazayas, even a mashehu of chometz, you're not allowed to have. So the question is, how do we understand these four halachas as regards the idea of chometz? The third kasha is, what is the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Why did the Rebbe Shalom take the Yidden out of Mitzrayim? What does he want to do with them? Which of course leads us into the fourth question, is what is the essential idea of Pesach? What is the true underlying meaning of Pesach? Well, in order to understand that, all we have to do is go right back to the drasha of Yetzar and Yetzatayv. And that's really what it is. What is matzah? Matzah is flour and water. What is chometz? Chometz is flour and water which has been fermented. In other words, it has risen. There's a lot of hot air or gases or whatever which have risen it. So in other words, chometz is really a distortion of matzah. Right? It's a distortion of matzah. So what matzah symbolizes is the thing in itself as it is, and what chometz symbolizes is matzah completely distorted, out of shape, because of the addition of a lot of hot air, which is not part of the matzah. So therefore we see that what the Rishon said to Klal Yisrael is, I want you to go to the madriga of matzah and stay away from chometz. What does that mean? What is matzah? Matzah is the thing in itself, which means that matzah is equivalent to an individual who is masig enoid milvadi, because that's a true perception of self, and he translates that belief into action, and therefore he's called an onof. Chometz is a distortion of the matzah. Therefore, what that is the Rebbe Shem is saying, do not be a gaiva. Do not distort all the illusion of self, which is really an illusion. It's a distortion of the etzem of a person, that you are really nothing. So therefore, what chometz is the illusion of self, because physically it's a distortion of the matzah. So the Rebbe Shem is saying, stay away from gaiva, or distorting the sense of self, which is what the Sitra Achra Yitzhar tries to give you. So that's what it is. The significance of chometz and matzah really is, matzah is enoid muvadoi, and chometz is yeshid muvadoi. It's a distortion of the matzah itself. Okay? So Rebbe Shalom is saying, stay away from chometz and go only to matzah. That's the significance of chometz and matzah. But wait a minute. To what degree do I stay away from chometz? So Rebbe Shalom says, don't eat chometz, meaning do not imbibe yourself with the ideas of yesh. Be mevaer chometz from your house. Take this sense of self or distortion and remove it. Work on yourself and remove whatever sense of self you have. Not only do not engage in things which will bring you a distortion of self, eating matzah, bringing from the outside in, but get from the inside out. Remove the chometz from your house. Get the feelings of self, the illusions you have, get it out of yourself. But wait a minute. How much should I get out? Even a mashehu. I don't want a mashehu of chometz in you. Not even a mashehu of gaiva is appropriate. Memela, even a mashehu, an infinitesimal amount of chometz is osa. But wait a minute, we know that gaiva can exist in two forms. A person can be self-complacent but relate to other people very nicely, right? Or a person can be very arrogant and relate in a way where he feels superior to you. So Rebbe Hashem says, Lo yiro elecha, I don't want you to see chometz in yourself, and I don't want it to even be found where it's not seen by others in yourself. That's the inyan of metziah. In other words, when a person looks at you, it should be that when he sees you, that not only does he not see any arrogance, but he shouldn't even see self-complacency. Or rather, that gaiva in an adam, which cannot be seen outside, because the person's not arrogant, he's only self-complacent, gaiva should not even be found in you, not only not seen by others. So in other words, Rebbe Hashem says, do not have chometz where you could see it, and even where it can't be seen, for instance, behind a closet, it shouldn't be found there. So Rebbe Hashem says, gaiva should not be seen in you by others, because if you're arrogant, it can be seen. Or it shouldn't even be found in you if it cannot be seen by others, because it's merely self-complacency, where you hold yourself to be somebody, but not greater than another. So if Rebbe Hashem says, lo yiroi lecha, it shouldn't be seen in you by others, arrogance or omnipotence, egomaniacal tendencies, or it shouldn't even be found in you where others don't see it. You shouldn't even be self-complacent. In other words, it's what they call kol givah lev. You shouldn't even be haughty of heart. That's so therefore we have a second question is answered. Why you have the gedorim of the mitzvah, why the mitzvah is in these kind of conditions. Why you're not allowed to eat it, why you have to remove it, why it cannot not even be seen in you, cannot even be found in you, and why it's also b'masho. Because chometz again represents gaiva. And it's interesting to note that the word gaiva comes from the root go'o, which I had mentioned previously. And go'o means to rise or swell. The word gaiva itself, which means to rise or swell, itself is an indication of chometz, which is a rising or swelling of the matzah. It's a distortion of the self, or a distortion of the matzah. So therefore we see that the ideas of chometz and matzah, what they signify, is that the Rebbe Hashem gave Klai Yisrael matzah and chometz. So he told them, do you know why I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim? To come from the madriga of chometz into the madriga of matzah. To come from the madriga of Yeshid Milvadoi into the madriga of Enoid Milvadoi. The mitzvah itself reflects the purpose of Yitzias Mitzrayim. The halachas of chometz and matzah reflects the whole idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So therefore we understand the significance of chometz and matzah, we understand the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim, why the Rebbe took them out, to go from a state of chometz to matzah, we understand the purpose or the essence of Pesach itself is to understand Yeshayid Mavadai, to go to Enayid Mavadai, and we understand the reasoning for these halachas. So we see Pesach itself is the grand statement of to go from Yeshayid Mavadeh to Enoid Mavadeh, which is the entire Melchoma of the Yetzahara and Yetzatoiv, the idea of being or non-being and achieving a sense of being from the feelings of non-being. And we see also that the Yidden achieved that Meredig. When the Yidden went, when they were Makabal the Torah, they said Nasa V'Nishma. Nasa V'Nishma means we will do the mitzvah even though we do not understand, and then we will try to understand it. Which means that they suspended their faculty of criticism, evaluation. But that means that they suspended the entire idea of self. Means there is no self, therefore I will not evaluate anything. So Nasa V'Nishma means that the Jews, in their very acceptance of Torah, forget about the mitzvahs, doing the mitzvahs, but the Kabbalah alone was a statement of Enoid Milvadoi. So the Rebbe Hashem rewarded them with two crowns, the Medrash says. So it says that each malach gave a Jew two crowns, one for Nas and the other for Nishma. And we can understand the two crowns as Yichud Mitziyusa and Yichud Shlitosai. The crown means, the significance of a crown means you perceive the crown, or you perceive the Rebbeinu Shalom. When it says that you receive the crown, means you receive the Hasog of the Rebbeinu Shalom. The crown is a Hasog, means a comprehension of God. So the first crown they received, or the first comprehension of royalty or God, was the idea of the unity of His force, Yichud Shlitasai, that God is the only force in the universe. And the second crown they received, the second perception of the Ribbono Shel, is the perception of Yichud Mitzusoi, that the God is the only thing that has existence. Those are two crowns they received because of the Kabbalah, which was a statement of Ein Eid Mavadeh. And the Medrash says that they all died, and the reason why they died is because since they perceived Ein Eid Mavadeh, their Mitzius became bottle, and they died. So it comes out that the Jews went from Mitzrayim, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, and they went all the way back to the Ein Eid Mavadeh. And that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam gave them, why they were so busy by matzah, by chipozn, they were very busy and they could only have time to make matzah. The Ribbono Shel Olam arranged in such a way where they only have time to make matzah, because what the Ribbono Shel Olam was saying, that I am taking you out of Egypt. Leaving Egypt means to become a matzah. Become Ein Eid Mavadeh. Not like Egypt, which is a Mushundig Yesha Eid Mavadeh. This is basically what I wanted to relate to you. The ideas of Yetzirah, Yetzer Tov, the whole fundamental conflict of man, of Ein Eid Mavadeh and Yesh Eid Mavadeh, and how the essence of Pesach in the halachas of Chometz and Matzah is nothing more than a statement of Ein Eid Mavadeh as the objective of all Jews.